Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Jason Williams, along with Sherry Coolidge, Silent Film, the ones and twos, and it is the two Sharon episodes today. Ohio Supreme Court Justice Sharon Kennedy will join us. She's from right here, Butler County, grew up in Colerain Township, and want to spend a little extra time with her today, so we're going to just kind of briefly chat here in the beginning and then switch over to Justice Kennedy.
Yes, you have to call her Justice Kennedy. Don't forget. Like, oh, Sharon, even though you call me Sherry, and everyone does pretty much.
Even though Justice Kennedy did, she's like, just call me Sharon when I talk to her to set up the interview. But it just seems weird to call a judge.
You know, one of my favorite moments was first name. With Vice President Kamala Harris. One of my favorite moments in the 4 minutes I spent with her, asking as many questions as I could squeeze in, possibly, like I could talk faster, but I couldn't make her talk faster, is I wasn't sure what to call her when I met her. It's not every day you meet the Vice President of the United States. Sometimes you meet them on the campaign trail, but not usually when they're actually the Vice President or the President, when you're the reporter for the Inquirer. But I was listening to the roundtable, which she was here for a couple weeks ago, and Senator Sherrod Brown, who is friends with her, called her Madam Vice President. And I was like, that seems like a good template. And so that's how I led into the conversation with her. I said to welcome to Cincinnati, kind of as the beginning, Madam Vice President. And she said, oh, no, my name is Kamala Harris. Please call me that. Not that I had a chance to address her again in those, 4 or 5 minutes. But anyway. It's
like, yes. Thank you for letting me know. But no, I won't be calling you that.
I'll be calling you Justice Kennedy today.
Madam Vice President Justice Kennedy today.
I was a little bit behind reading. I have a big Sunday story coming up about the Cincinnati's 911 center. We folded some things in about what's going on at the county 911 center and nationally. So I was a little bit behind on my reading yesterday as I was crashing on deadline. But I did read this morning your column addressing Dusty Roads. But it was not just what happened with Dusty Roads. You like really went there with a lot of what's going on with both parties.
Well, yeah. A week and a half ago, the Ohio Republican Party voted to censure Congressman Anthony Gonzalez from Northeast Ohio, the Canton, that area, because he voted to impeach Donald Trump in January. And I thought it was a very extraordinary move by the party to take a official vote to censure someone for voting their conscience. It wasn't like Anthony Gonzalez had any misconduct in office or committed any felonies in office or had been charged with any indicted on any felony charges. And so I thought that was extraordinary, especially given that the Ohio Republican Party has done absolutely nothing about Larry Householder, who has been indicted, not convicted, not,
you've exonerated several anything, times in your column.
That
I legal know how you feel.
Pending. And I thought that was one person can vote their conscience on something and they get officially censured, which means basically we don't want you in the party anymore. You're excommunicated. And then someone else can be indicted on a felony. And again, you can have your day in court. And yet on a $60 million bribery scandal, which Laura Bischoff, our reporter in Columbus, has written that that's the largest state government scandal going right now in the entire country. And yet the Republican Party has said nothing and taken no official action. The chair of the party last year after Householder was arrested did put out a statement saying he should resign. But that was, pretty standard. A lot of people do that. And that's serious. And I take that seriously. So then fast forward and flip it around and the Democrats here locally. In a different, obviously it's nuanced, but in a broader, similar way of how they've handled Dusty Rhodes and the council members who have been arrested on federal pay-to-play corruption charges. Dusty Rhodes says a lot of things on Twitter. He says a lot of things. He supports Donald Trump. He says a lot of cringeworthy things on Twitter. And my take on that is, criticize away. Put out statements. Criticize him on Twitter. Recruit a primary opponent, endorse that opponent, But I think it's an extraordinary measure for a political party to censure someone based on a vote or on a vote they take in office or tweets, essentially. And that's been the case here with Dusty. Meanwhile, the party has taken no, as a party, has taken no official vote or action on Tamaya Dennard, who will be going to federal prison on pay-to-play charges next month. P.G. Sittenfeld is his legal issues are continuing on. We saw Wendell Young last month indicted on a felony charge tampering with records related to the texting scandal. And yet there's been no official action by the party as a whole, the executive committee of the party, on those things. And yet Dusty Rhodes has run an efficient office, a scandal-free office for 30 years. Certainly, you know, people have had their complaints and all that, but for the most part has run a good office. And yet he gets kicked out, or he gets officially – I mean, really, this is a vote to censure him. They didn't call it that because they called it not in good standing, whatever the heck that means.
I mean, this is – I would say, you know, take the vote or don't take the vote. But really what things need to happen right now in the city of Cincinnati is this whole looking forward thing. I mean, there's a lot being said about who's running for council, who's running for mayor. And really, like, that election is in November.
Yeah.
November. And this city, I have said this here before, is kind of at a crisis point of all of the things that have happened over the last 4 years and what it's going to take to pivot, change things, and move forward. And yet there was a meeting about Dusty's tweets. And so, I mean, I'm not weighing in since do that or don't do that. But what I'm looking to hear from both parties, honestly, is, you know, what are we going to do going forward?
Well,
what is this going to look like?
Great point, Sherry. And speaking of going forward, also, when you are looking at all these open seats moving forward, whether that's this year or, you know, in the next 2022, and there's some countywide seats open, and 2024 and on down the online, what kind of message is this sending to future candidates? It's like, hey, if you do not follow these five ideological talking points, and if you stray from that and tweet against those beliefs or viewpoints, then you could find yourself being censured from the political party. It's like, well, maybe I believe in four of those 5 points, but maybe I have an issue. And it's like, what happened to free speech and First Amendment?
And it would be nice if people knew what everybody stood for. Like, you know, whatever Dusty says, people can look at it. We write about it. People can look at it for themselves, judge, and
that's
then
right.
Go in the voter booth and say yes or no. So, like, scaring people, we just saw kind of the similar thing with Derek Bauman. He had a lot of tweets. What happened there? He decided not to run for council. He's this transit activist that's really just been around. I mean, people really know his name. He's one of those council candidates that, like, well, you know that person's name. He's not running now. That kind of unfolded a week and a half ago. But because of, you know, these tweets, these old tweets that he had deleted, and I won't really get into it now because I really do want to get to Justice Kennedy. But, you know, then you get to look at what, you know, his tweets were. Yes or no? Just did he change? Did he not change? But, like, you have this body of work to get to know these people.
And at the end of the day, that's up to the voters. That's up to the voters of the city of Cincinnati. And in that case, it's up to the voters of Hamilton County when it comes to the auditor seat. And to me, taking moves like what happened with Dusty Rhodes in the Democratic Party, with Anthony Gonzalez in the Republican Party, is the parties themselves saying, like, ooh, no, we're small. We have a small tent. There's no room for you. And we're going to put our thumb on the scale here to try to basically force you out. And you're done. You're done with us, or we're done with you. And that's – That's unfortunate. Because,
I'll refer
again,
everyone to his tweets and how he felt about it.
And as I wrote my column, I said, I'm not here to defend what he said. I'm here to defend his right to say it. And this is what we do. We defend the First Amendment, and we're champions of it, and so be it. Let's get to Justice Sharon Kennedy. All right, special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast, and pleased to welcome to the podcast Ohio Supreme Court Justice from right here in Greater Cincinnati, Butler County, Sharon Kennedy. Justice Kennedy, how you doing?
I am fantastic. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us here today. And it's unique to have I don't think we've ever had a Supreme Court justice on our podcast, and I've had I think a few judges and folks from the law area, but gosh, so much going on, and you're a statewide elected official from right here in Greater Cincinnati and Butler County. It's interesting. We have three Ohio Supreme Court justices from right here in Greater Cincinnati. But wanted to really, you keep a very low profile. You stick your head down and do your job. But we want to have you share a little bit about your story. And you're a statewide elected official from here, right here. And I'm intrigued by your story. You went from being a police officer in Hamilton to Supreme Court justice. And talk about your career in law and how you got going. You first talk about going into first being a police officer. Well, you grew up here in Cincinnati too, or in Greater Cincinnati.
I grew up in Coleraine Township, and I went to Northwest High School. And when I was 10, all I wanted to do was to be a police officer, and I credit television for this, because at the time of my error, I was getting off the big yellow school bus, running into the house, grabbing my after-school snack, and I was watching One Adam 12, Rita Malloy knocking it out in L.A. And I really believe it was that moment and those police dramas that drove me into wanting to be a police officer. What I really saw is a noble and honorable profession. People who dedicate their life to helping others in their community, answering calls for service. They didn't win every day. They didn't catch the criminal every day. But they did a wide variety of activities. Yes, they responded to those criminal complaints, but they settled neighborhood disputes. They got a kitten out of the tree. They helped a little old lady. I mean, all of that to me just really spoke to my heart of service. And that was all I wanted to do. But it was Mr. Shearing in my high school. And I tell students everywhere across Ohio, it was a 5-minute throwaway conversation, perhaps for him. But it was something that stuck with me my entire life. I had taken his general law class, and he stopped me in the hallway as I was getting ready to leave. And he said, "Sharon, I know you want to be a police officer, and that's what your drive is right now." He said, "But you could be so much more than that. You could be a lawyer. You could be a judge someday. You are so passionate about this class. I could really see it. You're so smart. You could do this." And I can remember at 17 laughing at Mr. Shearing and said, "That's not really possible for someone like me." And at 17, because you know so much of the world, what it really meant for me is I saw socioeconomic barriers of my parents really being that line of or that ceiling against rising. And even though my parents said, "Decide, commit, work hard, have fortitude, that's how you achieve your dream," I really thought there were some other barriers out there. And as I went off to college, I was the first to go to college in my family. My parents grew up poor in the Great Depression, so we were a very modest means. And I just thought to be a lawyer or a judge, you would have to be wealthy, elitist, generational. You would be the son or daughter of a doctor or a dentist. But law enforcement became the great equalizer, because after graduating the University of Cincinnati with a School of Social Work degree, I have a bachelor's degree in social work, and then engaging in law enforcement, it's when I really met a lawyer and a judge. There were some exactly what I thought at 17. They were wealthy. They were elitist. They were the sons and daughters of doctors and dentists and lawyers themselves. But there were a lot of kids that had made it, even becoming judges, that grew up just like me, whose parents grew up very poor in the Great Depression. They found a pathway out. They were the first to go to college. And that equalizing moment really became full circle for me from what Mr. Shearing had said to me that day. And I always think that you should have a little humility. As my mother would say, nobody died and made you Grace Kelly. You're not the Princess of Monaco. And I always wondered if I was smart enough to be a lawyer. And I was on the witness stand. I was being cross-examined by a criminal defense attorney. And I literally had this moment, a lightning bolt, where I was like, wow, geez, if that guy can make it through law school, I know I can. I'm a lot smarter than that guy is. I could ask a lot better questions. And that was it. I saw that opportunity. I had that thought. And I literally left the courthouse that day, and I called the University of Cincinnati to say, how do I enroll in law school? What do I have to do to get there? So when you have that inspiration, what I say to everyone listening, act.
Hmm. How many women were in your police academy class?
From memory, I have the photograph. I think there were three or four, and we're talking 1985. So I went to the police department May 5th of 1985, and I was at the Ohio State Patrol Academy. My chief was military. He believed in a disciplined paramilitary police department. And I'm not disparaging OPATA, the Ohio Peace Officers Training Academy. He really liked the discipline of what he saw in troopers. He liked the discipline of the training academy. So I went to the Ohio State Patrol Academy. I was class basic 58.
You did have the fortitude to do that, though, because it wasn't like, I mean, just not that long ago is the push to, you know, for gender equality and diversity in police departments. That's not that old of an initiative of looking at these classes. So you did, I mean, you were brave enough to do that at the time, I feel like.
I would agree that it was a different time. And I would agree that there were obstacles, barriers, and hurdles to climb over, not by the system, but by people working in the system. You can take any situation in your life and you will face adversity from others. And you have a choice in that moment to believe what they're saying you are and what you're worth, or to believe in yourself and move on and allow it to be that noise in the background. And there was a gentleman, and I did get toe-to-toe with him, who is also in the class. And what he said to me is women didn't belong there, that I was taking the place that a man needed to feed his family. He had a very strong belief that women should be at home, having children, baking cookies, and it was raw. It was in your face, and you had the, in that moment, you had to decide, are you going to wilt away? Are you going to step up to that line and argue your point back? And that has always been me. I don't engage confrontation for sports. I don't look for it. But you do have to take that stand and not back down. And what I saw at the academy from him, no one else, no other man instructor ever acted like he did. But when I went to the police department, the reality is there were some men just like him. I used to call them in my speeches old guys and my guys. You know, in those older generations, they just had a different view of the world. And you can't change it just because society decides to move forward. It is something that you then integrate, or it becomes part of your thinking at more modern day. I saw the same thing as I stepped into the legal world and being a lawyer. Some of the
Do older- you feel like somewhere out that this person is still out there and he got a ballot with your name on it to be an Ohio Supreme Court justice? I feel like that happened.
I can assure you that did happen. It has been an amazing thing to see those transitions. And I think society's come a long way. I'd like to say there are a lot fewer of the old guys and a lot more of my guys. And let's be honest, policing's very difficult, and I won't even address what's happening right now in current society. But in 1985, I was one of four women who was at the department. Other women had come and gone, but I was one of four. And I was assigned to a shift that had never had a female before. And what has to be in the back of all their minds, and it's the same question where they have a new male officer coming in. What are they made of? Are they going to be there in those tough moments? Will they have the wherewithal to fight, not flight? Will they step into that when you're in the middle of a bar fight and chaos is breaking out or a crisis? Will they have the ability to shoot, to kill when your life is in danger? Their lives depend on the officers around them. So for some of that, that was really trying to see what was her metal, where was she going to be. But at the same point in time as testing metal becomes those things that you do. In my opinion, I did so many things that I could have ended up being seriously injured, and I was lucky by the grace of God, because I didn't want to look as if I was weak. I didn't want to look as if I couldn't do my job. I took risks that probably other officers wouldn't have taken, because they would have said, it takes two to do this job and we should do it together. And that was a point that we call it the bull car. It was the two-man unit. And they actually came to one of those calls that I answered. And they said, why wouldn't you wait for a backup before you came in here? And it was really that conversation that really allowed me to understand the risk I'm putting myself in, because I don't want to ask for help or I don't want to appear weak. There is this balance that you must have. It's all about knowing your limit, and it's okay to ask for help. And it's okay to wait for help.
You went on, after 4 years at the Hamilton Police Department, you went on to law school, as you said, and went into, worked in the Butler County. You were the domestic relations judge in Butler County. And then fast forward to you run for Supreme Court in 2012. Talk about how that all came about and how you made that decision to take that big step.
Well, I have to take you back to November of 1991. When I was graduating law school, I was ending a clerkship with Judge Crehan, who was a general division judge in the Court of Common Pleas of Butler County. And I had been his law clerk for my last 2 years of law school. My first year of law school, I stayed at the police department as a civilian assistant to the chief, writing accreditation, police procedure, and policy.
Wow.
And my last day I was with Judge, we were sitting in his office and he was throwing a file into the outgoing bin, and he said, kid, what do you want to do? You're so bright, you're so smart, you could do anything you wanted to do. And I looked at Judge and I said, I want to be you. I want to try cases in all the courts. I want to live like girl on fire. And someday I want to be a judge. I really loved what we did here. I love this experience. And he literally said these words, kid, you're so young, so ambitious, so smart, you could make it all the way to the Ohio Supreme Court. And I said to Judge Crehan in that moment exactly what I said to Mr. Shearing at 17 in high school. I really looked at running for statewide offices. You had to be wealthy. And I'm talking like you had to be millionaire status, as you look at all these politicians who are.
Yeah.
You had to be a child of a generational politician, somebody whose name is always out there, somebody who has, all of that affluence of what I call wealth and politics behind them. But what he then ushered me into was really engaging in local politics. It was then that I was an independent. until I graduated law school. My parents were non-declared voters, great Americans who believed in the privilege to vote and exercise it, but they didn't believe in political party apparatus. They didn't choose one party because in their mind, if you chose a party, you had to only vote for that person that represented that party, and they never wanted to do that. In their mind, they voted for the men and women who would advance what they believed where we should be going as a community, as a state, and as a country. But Judge Crehan is the one who ushered me into the Republican Party. My fiscal responsibility views, my view of government is more aligned with those thoughts, smaller, limited government. And I joined the Young Republican Club, and that's when I met my congressman, John Boehner. I had never met a congressman before, ever. It was then that I met his chief of staff, Mick Krieger, and it's then that I started.
You know that wasn't like a normal congressman, right? Like, you had the opportunity. I just finished his book a little bit ago. You had the opportunity to just meet just an absolute character, a leader. Like, yeah, that was a good first one.
Well, think about this. Think about if you've read his book, and I haven't read it yet. Think about where he came from. How large his family was. He was the son
Reading,
of a
Ohio.
Barkeep.
Yep.
Yeah.
Modest and meager beginnings, and how far he rose. But that is the gift and promise of America. But it was that relationship with Boehner Land, is what we affectionately call it, and volunteering at all of those events while I was practicing law that really gave me what I say are the chops to run for political office. I understood the nomenclature of what it takes to run. So when I ran for the trial court, that was something that I gained from that relationship. And they've helped me all along my journey, including when I went to see Mick to talk about running for the Supreme Court. You know, you have to be reflective of how big this state is, what an overwhelming challenge this looks like as someone, because you're talking about, yes, I ran in Butler County, but that's one county. Now there are 87 others. And I am not generational. My father, my mother, they are not part of the political machine that have been elected for 40 and 50 years. They weren't millionaires. So how do you go from there to Supreme Court justice? Yeah. And when I went to talk to Mick, and he wasn't laughing at me because he thought my idea was ludicrous, he really set me on the path of, here are the things you need to think about. And the first four, you really have to be willing to leave Cincinnati. You have to be willing to give up your life. I am rarely at home in Butler. I come home when I'm not campaigning, but I'm not there long because I always have other speeches and commitments, and that's what it takes to run statewide. And it was a gift. Boehner Land, my great mentors of Mr. Shearing, my parents, Judge Crehan, they have been the gift that has given me the pathway to achieving my American dream. I could not imagine my life without them and the influence and helping me on this journey. Get what, not what they want, what I wanted out of my life.
Wow. Are you, do you still stay in touch with Speaker Boehner?
I do. Yeah. I saw Speaker Boehner in early March. I was in Marco visiting some friends from Butler County and had the opportunity. We all had dinner together. I see Mick often whenever I get home. I see Judge Crehan often when I get home. I call him. I try and stay in touch while I'm on the road, but I definitely, when I come home, try to see if we can't have lunch or dinner. My mother's passed. I did have the opportunity to go back and see Mr. Shearing. Northwest graciously awarded me an Alumni Achievement Award, and Mr. Shearing was there.
Oh, fantastic.
What year was that?
20 years later,
what
I
year was
could
that?
Thank him for that conversation. It was an amazing moment.
Is he still teaching?
No, he's retired, but yeah. He still lives in Corrine Township, and he still stays, and he's a farm out there, is my understanding, and he still stays in touch with many of the students that came through Northwest.
You talk about reaching heights in your career. This is fantastic, your story, and much respect for, you know, what you've done, and there's been a lot of buzz. I think it's the, it seems like it's the political story that the biggest political story that the Ohio public doesn't really know about right now. And that's the race for Supreme Court, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court with, that seat will be open next year. And I've heard your name come up a lot for it.
And the name of Pat DeWine, who you kind of were describing when you were talking about what you had thought a justice would be, from a political family, wealthy, somebody who's known. Is that resonating with you as you look forward?
I only look forward with what I think that I can accomplish. I look forward with my dreams, and I look forward with my passion of what I believe I can accomplish. And that is my only focus.
You're in, right? You're in that race?
So right now, it's complicated to say, are you in that race? Right now, the state Republican Party will have somewhat of a say. Right now, I am making my case across Ohio, giving speeches, talking to state central committee members, talking to members, chairmen who run the local county parties. So in all honesty, yes, I am asking for their support to be the endorsed candidate to run for chief in 2022.
So when you talk about, you know, making this leap and achieving your dreams, it is such a big state. I have been trying to impress upon people in just my writing about Cincinnati how important judges are. It's a judge appointing a council member down here has shifted the balance of Cincinnati City Council. Some of these judicial decisions are not just somebody committed a crime. You go before the judge and you think, oh, well, I'll never be there. That'll never be me. How can people get to know their judicial candidates and not just look at a ballot and be like, well, that name looks good?
Well, I think there are three things, really. One, I think they have to decide who they are as a voter. You know, so much of when you look at our system of government as established by the founders, it's a tripartite system of government. And in that triangle, all three of those branches are separate, co-equal, and independent. But it's a result of all three engaging that we have balance in the republic lives. That being said, you have to take as serious as it relates to the issue of electing judges as you would a member of council or a county commissioner or a member of the legislative branch, your state senators and representatives. Where the disconnect happens, and I think you identify it, is they feel they're not connected to judges. But today, more than ever, you can meet a judge. I was in Findlay, Ohio, and I gave four speeches the other day. Some were open to the public, some were not. But in that moment, the fact that I was there was recognized. People stopped me, asked me questions, who I was, where I came from. Everyone has that opportunity, but they have to want to engage it. And much to your point, think about this. Everything in your life can land on a judge's desk. Not just a criminal case or a parking ticket or a speeding violation. Everything. From the rate you pay for your utilities to your taxes, whether that's property or sales, whether or not a class action, a tort action, interpreting all of the statutes that the General Assembly has enacted. I mean, let's be honest. The Ohio Revised Code hasn't diminished in size. It's grown in size. And every single one of those chapters is writing a law about the conduct that guides us, that your representatives that you voted on have created. And as a result of that, any controversy surrounding any of those can come before a judge. And as it relates to that, it is a critical part of our tripartite system of government not to engage it. Not to understand who is the thinker that you're putting on the bench. And you have to decide who you are. Do you want somebody who's going to follow the letter of the law? Do you want somebody who's going to ignore words, erase words, skip words, and get to an outcome? Those are your choices. And you should care about this because a lot rides on that very issue when it comes to judging.
Where are you at? I know it's been it's a debate right now whether to put an R or D, Republican or Democrat, on the ballot with judicial candidates. Have you waded into that debate yet, or where do you stand on that?
I have not weighed into the debate. I think it's really I've had my say with my state senator and my representative as a taxpayer. I think that they're going to do what they want to do. Personally, I am not in favor of it. When we were founded in this great country, Federalist Paper 78, there is no political view of judges. That is exactly why judges are appointed, nominated by a president, selected by the Senate as confirmed. They removed politics, made them independent and strong, gave them lifetime appointments because of the whims of politics. They wanted them to be beyond political influence. There are only four other states that actually put, maybe there's a fifth one now with North Carolina. There's only four or five other states that make judges partisan when it comes to a general ballot. It is different when you look at what is the purpose of a primary. It is if there is a contest within a party system to select one candidate to move forward. What is a general election? It is the opportunity of all people to select who should serve them in that post. But both parties have their choice of representation, and then look at what happens. The Green Party can have a candidate. The Libertarians can have a candidate. Somebody can run as an independent. And you can see that from 2018. Look at all the groups that ran for the governor's office. There was a Democrat, there was a Republican, there was a Green candidate, a Libertarian, and an independent. All of the judicial associations who have been asked to weigh in on this very question of whether to politicize judicial races said no. They are Republicans and Democrats alike, and they voted no that politicizing judges is the wrong path for Ohio. You don't really hear or see that in the reporting, but all of those associations who took those votes across their membership said, no, this is not right. The other thing I'm gravely concerned about is, think about this. If you want to talk about election integrity, and you want to start talking about the fact that the only thing that makes elections have integrity is if we have party affiliation, is that that's what gives you honesty, integrity, and transparency in an election, then why stop at appellate level judges? Why not have all judges? Why not have school board members, village council, municipal races? If having an R and a D makes elections transparent, then shouldn't we care about all elections and not just some?
Great point.
I am very concerned of where we go. In 2020, I looked at the political advertising as being the most politically attacked ad in time. And that is not what we are supposed to engage in when we look at judges. When you go back and play those ads on either side from any of those organizations or third parties out there, they're attacking someone for what they say was a political decision. And a judge has no ability to counterbalance that. But when you go back and read those decisions, which the voters won't, or many people won't, all of them point to what the statute said and what caused them to believe what they wrote was based on the law. This is a dangerous world, because once you put R's and D's behind appellate judges, and that brings transparency, integrity, honesty to our vote, then I think you've already passed through a door. That now that you've used those kind of words for this, you are going to start looking at that in a wider spectrum. And in politicizing these positions that were looked at as nonpartisan, whether or not we're doing more damage, whether or not we're bringing more of the civil discourse and divide instead of bringing voters together.
Yeah.
I envision we see more of those ads. I envision that if this passes, and honestly, I've been told it's going to pass regardless of what people think, that when this passes, that those election ads become more attack ad. They become more based on politics and not about what we truly are responsible for doing as a member of the judiciary.
Then my job is
to advance the political Republican platform. It's not to advocate for them. That is not my job. My job is to apply the law as it is written. Nothing more, nothing less.
Is it possible then to run and say you're not going to be involved in that back and forth, that kind of advertising, and still prevail? Or does a candidate have to participate to get through?
In today's politics, yeah.
You know, I think that's a great question. And I can honestly say I don't know. In 2020, I would not do negative advertising at all. I focused on my message, who I was, what I did. I did not engage in that aspect. One, because you have to make a decision then that you're going to spend dollars actually advancing your opponent's name. And I just say this, Eric Cantor. Eric Cantor, who, you know, in a race against a Tea Party member, he spent all his advertising dollars attacking the Tea Party member, millions of dollars, and he wins. Not one positive ad about himself and who he was. I mean, this becomes very complicated, in my opinion, when you start doing this with judges. We don't raise as much money as any of these others. And then it becomes, we just fall into the same political mud of mudslinging that others do. And I just really don't believe that that's what judges should do.
Is that the... go ahead.
We've been held to a higher standard. With nonpartisan ballot, we have been looked upon as separate and apart from the political, typical election cycle. And I fear about where we're going to go.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but at the core of it is there are Republicans who are pushing this because the Democrats have had success on it's 4-3 now, Republican, Democrat on the Ohio Supreme Court. And Republicans overall – or sorry, Democrats overall have obviously struggled in Ohio, but they found a way to have some success on the Supreme Court. Is that what's at the crux of this, is that there are some Republicans who are pushing this to make sure that voters or know who the Democrats are?
I don't know. I have not been in those rooms. I'm not in those circles.
Yeah.
That would be a decision maker well above my pay grade and in a different system, right? Because now you're talking about what is it that people in charge of the Republican Party think. So I'm not part of that conversation. So I don't know what the motivator is. This is not the first time it's been discussed in reality. It was discussed in 18. It was discussed in 16. The earliest I had ever heard this conversation was in about 14. And these were members of the General Assembly, legislatures. And my response to them, if they talk to me about it, is the same that I've given you today.
Yeah.
I do not believe that judges should be engaged in that world of being politicized. My job is not to advance a party platform or a law or a missive for a party apparatus. My job is to decide the law based on its text. Nothing more, nothing less. And I fear we lose integrity as a third branch of government by doing this, because what do people think? Some people already think that decisions are based on politics. I disagree emphatically.
Yeah.
But once you move down this direction, are we really pushing public opinion and judges and the respect for them and the work they do as neutral arbitrators of the law in a different direction?
That's great stuff. And I have one more question for you. I don't know if Sherry may have one too. But you're, like you said, you're all over the state and you're all over 88 counties and talking to people and talking to diverse groups of people. And what's the one, if you could sort of bottle it all up and say, what's the one thing you hear about the most? Or what's the one question you get the most? while you're out across the state, out in Gallia County and, you know, Northwest Ohio and wherever.
Well, I think this year, because of the pandemic, it's all about when will we get back to normal. People upset, losing their businesses. I'm concerned about freedom and liberty. Obviously concerned about the election, the direction that the country has taken. In years past, it would be about why do you believe that really you matter in our scope of government? It's really was that more basic conversation of why judges matter in your life and how do I explain to someone why it's important to actually care about who you elect. It was more of that more general conversation. Now there's a lot more concern and fear that I hear from people. Yeah. And it's unlike ever before. And it's a little foreboding, I think, for people. So much has happened in the last year and so much is happening right now. And I think they're afraid.
I do have one more question. Let's go back to politics. I was wondering, you know, we are seeing a lot in the Senate race that's really ramping up right now of, you know, what kind of influence President Trump is going to play in, you know, really endorsing a candidate. Do you think that's going to be true in all of the races statewide?
Well, you know, I think that right now that there is that conversation. Look, I don't know former President Trump. I've never met him. I would say that there are faithful, loyal followers of President Trump in Ohio. I believe that you can see in the conversation or what I say, the speeches of the Senate candidates, that there are some vying for his endorsement because they believe that is a powerful pathway to victory. I'm not sure that he engages in that. I don't know that he gets involved in all races, but I think that those running for the U.S. Senate believe that he's going to get involved in at least their race, and they're trying to position them
as
following that America First. You hear it in all of their speeches of carrying path that some, not all, you hear it in their speeches of picking up the mantle of making America great, keeping America great, following that pathway. So, yeah. I think you're going to see that.
Do you see him endorsing or weighing in on? And again, I know you haven't officially said but you've shown interest. Do you see him having an endorsement in the Chief Justice race?
No, you know you've never seen presidents do that. Well, I'll take that back. The first time I'd ever seen a former president endorse in a Supreme Court justice race was North Carolina in 2018. And former President Barack Obama actually endorsed, did a YouTube video for and a fundraising directly for a candidate. Yeah. That was the first time. I have never seen that ever before. I don't know that the president would engage that. At that level, I do believe that what you have seen in the past is former presidents do engage in congressional races for the House and the Senate. Of course, that's the branch of government. It's also the federal system that they've engaged in.
Yeah.
So you saw President Trump here to help then candidate Troy Balderson win his congressional seat. He's been here at other times to help statewide officials.
Yeah.
But I've never really seen a Republican president reach down into a judicial race. And I also think that everybody says he's going to do it soon. You know, take the step back and let's just look at politics. Why would you make a decision now? I mean, you're still 300 some odd days out from the primary, which is May 4th of next year. I actually believe that if he's going to engage in these races, he's going to make a decision closer to election time. Because who would want to endorse somebody who then implodes and doesn't finish? I mean, there's a lot of time here.
No doubt. Well, Justice Kennedy, this has been fantastic and just great to get to know you and hear your story and, you know, talk about how you got to where you're at. And this is just really appreciate you taking all this time today to join us here on the podcast.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for the opportunity. It was so nice for you to think of me and invite me. I love the Queen City. She is my hometown. When I come home, I still love to go to all the chili parlors. I love my Cincinnati chili. And thanks so much for having me.
Thanks again to Justice Kennedy. And, I just sort of randomly, Sherry, thought, you know what, really would like to get some different guests and just thought, hey, we have a Supreme Court justice from right here in Butler County. And I literally just read her story that she used to be a police officer and thought, what the heck, let's get her on. That's great stuff.
And as I was saying, it is hard to get to know these justices. You don't know really a lot about them. I do feel like I know her so much better now, and that wasn't even that long of a conversation.
Yeah, me too. Well, Sherry, we shift into, and Justice Kennedy there, she gave us a nice segue, I think, with dropping a little sky, little not skyline, Cincinnati-style chili and her love for that. But that brings us to our That's So Cincinnati moment of the week, our non-chili That's So Cincinnati moment of the week. And Sherry, you've got one.
Well, it actually was a work assignment, but the best kind of work assignment, no offense to City Hall. I covered the first FC Cincinnati soccer game at TQL Stadium. We've had, you know, a recent spate of guests related to the stadium being built in the West End. And the stadium was, you know, it is everything that they promised. It's one of the nicest stadiums in the United States. Don Garber, the MLS commissioner, said anywhere, like, this is his judgment. He's been to all of them. And I asked him after he said that, like, at a ribbon cutting, I said, do you say that at all the ribbon cuttings? And he said, no, yours really is very nice.
And that was the goal.
Yes. No pun intended. So
I didn't even think of that.
So you know what though, the That's So Cincinnati moment of from the takeaway is I was covering the atmosphere, not the game. No one ever wants me to cover soccer. We have Pat Brennan to do that. But you know, I covered the march from Northern Row Brewery, you know, really up McMicken all the way to the West End Stadium, stopping at Finley Market and at Washington Park. And this is my takeaway. Now, they used to play at Nippert Stadium, and, you know, the different supporter groups would be at very close bars, kind of clustered around.
They'd pick them up along the march, yeah.
Correct. And a lot of fans in, you know, these one spot. This brought fans from all over downtown to various places. They were at all of the bars, and then they met at the various points. They came over to Finley Market. Finley Market, and it has lately been teeming with people. It was a beautiful day outside, but in this day it was teeming with people in FC Cincinnati gear, and there were so many people everywhere downtown and in such a good mood. And like, as it was on the heels of, you know, the mask mandate being lifted and a lot of the orders, like that, just a whole rolling day of like all of the pandemic things kind of being rolled back with the CDC's, you know, big ruling that vaccinated people, you know, really have a lot more freedom right now to be safe. And it felt like just the energy downtown into the West End, into that stadium, was something that's been a long time coming and something I haven't felt in a long time. So that's my That's So Cincinnati moment, because it was pretty exciting to see and feel.
That's fantastic. It looked like looked like a lot of energy around that, and you were right there with the march. And
They are going to have a full stadium mid-June. The mid-June, Reds are going to have a full stadium June 2nd. I think sports are really, you know, a lot is said about having these stadiums in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. But when you think about what they're going to be driving this summer, when everyone is like, we need to energize the economy downtown, bring people downtown, help the restaurants. I have like a full Red stadium on June 2nd is going to do that. It's going to help bring back all of the things that we want to have in our urban core. The TQL Stadium is going to do that. You know, come August with the preseason games for the Bengals.
Yeah.
Like in the banks with the Dora. There's a lot to look forward to this summer.
It's awesome. Great stuff, Sherry. And we'll, I can't wait. It's going to be great. I think we've covered a lot here today, so we will catch everyone next week. Thank you.